I really don't want to speak now. I have a reputation, as most congressmen do, for being a rather talkative person, but I wanted to go home after this solo. I wanted to slip away and let the message that was in that song and in the previous speaker's testimony impress itself upon my mind and heart. There are a lot of things on my heart right now that I would like to share with you. Thank you for this warm greeting you gave me. I was afraid you were leaving the room. You're going to go off and leave me without an audience. As I listened to this thrilling solo, I remembered something of my early days in the Little Russellville Baptist Church, and I must say something about that before I tell you the things I had prepared myself to say. My first lessons in political science, my first instruction in the profession of politics to which I have given my life, were in that church. I believe in democracy. I believe in equality. These are words we glibly use, but with me they have a spiritual content. My first lessons in the art of giving justice to people was at the knees of a lawyer father who was a deacon in that little church. So I am profoundly grateful to my church and my Baptist people for what they have done for me professionally. But I was thinking about this this friendship with Jesus of whom she sang. He captured my boyish heart in those days at Russellville. And I thrilled to the record that was made of his life. It was said of him, the common people heard him gladly. It was said of him that he went about doing good. I am not an ordained minister. I'm often asked to fill the role of the preacher, and I cannot speak prophetically and professionally and theologically about Jesus. But I know whom I have believed, and I know these things about that record that have meaning in the life of our distraught world today. I remembered as she sang the sight of my mother sitting by the woman who did our washing, Miss Helen, Mother called her. I remembered Uncle Tom Davis, who sat across the aisle from Father. He was our faithful blacksmith. These people were not rich people. They had little of this world's goods. My father was more favored economically. He was one of the town's lawyers, a successful lawyer, and he was able to give more than Uncle Tom or Miss Helen. But in the congregation's life, we were all equal. We were equal in God's sight. And we had acquired from the revelation of God's love through Jesus some conception of what the Christian life means. This is extemporaneous. I hadn't planned to say these things, but it's authentic, sort of a testimony. Somebody said it's too bad they did away with testimony meetings, Brooks. You love to talk, so if we could have just preserved those testimony meetings, you wouldn't have had to go into politics. We could have saved you for an honorable career. When I stood in the pulpit of Moscow's Baptist Church the other day, it wasn't long ago, less than 3 weeks, and I had the little Russian interpreter conveying my message to the Russians, and I used that word testimony. It was about the only time, there were two occasions when she couldn't grasp the word and translate it into Russian. She'd never heard the word testimony. She said a little talk, and I said, that'll do. So this is a little talk. I wanted to say that because it was on my heart. It was said of Spurgeon that his preaching was so great because the hotel maid or the cab driver, the humblest people in the city of London sitting on the back row of the balcony, felt under the spell of his preaching that in God's sight they were important. People are important. And if we lose our passion for reaching people, we've lost something that's very precious in the Baptist tradition. We're becoming a favored people. Dr. Truett said one time that he had an anonymous note. All it said was, pray for a young man that's getting rich very fast. I pray for a denomination that's getting rich very fast. May our wealth and our prosperity never pull us away from common people, poor people, less fortunate people, the people of whom we've heard this morning. One of the things that impressed me about the survey committee's discussions, one of the first things we heard after we appointed a staff expert to study Baptist literature, to see what it is we're really trying to do as a convention. We so seldom give thought to that. What is our purpose? This convention, not the church, but this voluntary assembly of churches. It's a creature of freedom. It's under the aegis of the American system of freedom by which people come together to do something. And what are we trying to do? They studied the literature of our Baptist agencies to determine it. And they came up with some interesting observations. They said the three words that show up in your literature all through our agency service are these, and it will not surprise you: God, the people, Jesus Christ. And they concluded that our purpose may be so stated: to bring people closer to God through Jesus Christ. Now, I've been interested lately in Russian people. I want to talk to you about that. But I was interested in your use of the 96th Psalm because as I read it in the devotional preparation for this talk, I was interested in the words that are in that psalm. A new song. All the earth, strength and beauty, linked together. That's an interesting thing. Strength and beauty. We do not associate beauty ordinarily with strength and power, but the psalmist did, and there it is. God has made all things beautiful in his time, but we must lend a hand. And so we need strength and power, and as Paul said, he hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of love and of power and a sound mind. The beauty of holiness and all the earth, the peoples, it might be said, of all the earth. He shall judge the people righteously. Isaiah said, he will not rest until he has established judgment in the earth. That encourages me because I tire sometimes as a craftsman in the field of government, trying to establish justice in my humble way, to make my contribution as a Christian to the processes of justice. And I tire, but the Bible tells me that God will not tire until he has established justice. And so he shares my fatigue. He shall judge the people righteously. What rich words these are. Let the earth be glad for that. We're living in a new age, a new world. Change is so pronounced. And I think that's the basic fact about our times. We live in a period of such new and thrilling discoveries. Many of the secrets that we thought were forever locked from us have been revealed, and it's changing life. It's changing the face of the earth, and I think they're all for the best if we use ingenuity and Christian devotion. It's only been a few years since we discovered atomic power and what a change that has brought. 1942, I believe, in the University of Chicago, when Enrico Fermi unlocked some of these secrets using the formula which perplexed you and me that the great Einstein had brought forth, that energy equals mass multiplied by c squared, which is the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second. Square that sum and you get a terrific figure, and then multiply the mass and you have the energy that is bound up in this thing. And so this precious material, a thimbleful of it, atomic power, can produce electric power equal to the power that is generated by a Grand Coulee Dam in 12 and a half years. Is it any wonder that Dr. Compton then wired to Dr. Conant, president of Harvard University, "The Italian navigator has reached the shores of a new world." Reminded us of Columbus and his journeys, which brought him to a new world. And by a coincidence, it was an Italian that brought that discovery to our times and to our people. But we could not hold the secret. It belongs to all men. Our Russian neighbors are, from our point of view, greatly misusing their power, though I shall have something to say this week in some of the talks that you must listen to. I'm sorry. I shall have something to say about it, about the hopefulness that there is in the hearts of observers of the Russian scene. This is sort of a background for some specific things I shall say in the course of the week about the Russian situation, because, again, as a representative in Congress, I have some responsibilities for the preservation of peace. Peace and goodwill and international friendships. The point I want to make is that this is a world of new discoveries and a world of great change, and the Christian must take it into account. And I gather that from the spirit of this psalm, that we are urged to gather strength and to use our talents for good purposes and to be concerned with people, for the people are so often referred to. And so I rejoice in the opportunity to talk with the women who themselves hold such great power in the Southern Baptist Convention. What a wonderful example you have set for the men. I tell them about you. When I use the word layman, I'm never thinking of just the men. I'm thinking of the men and women, but we men have lagged behind. You have set such good examples for us. The Russians may help us here, however, for while half of the women of Russia, or rather half of the workmen apparently, are women, and most of the women of Russia are working, their labors still seem confined to the drudgery of mixing mortar and carrying bricks, some of them laying bricks, and they work in the fields. There is much manual labor which we would like to spare our women in the West. Some of them now are entering the offices to perform new duties. The scene in Russia is changing, and one of the last observations Brother Zidkoff made when I left him was that we're getting ready now to ordain women, that they might have a more prominent part in the work of the churches of Russia. And so why shouldn't we be interested in Russian people? When wilt thou save the people? Lord of mercy, when? The people, Lord, the people, not crowns and thrones, but men. God, save the people. Thine they are, thy children as the angels fare. From vice, oppression, and despair, God, save the people. I think one of the saddest moments of this 4 days in Moscow was when we stood in the museum. The Kremlin, is much of that space is now devoted to the exhibition of things that were very valuable. Fabulous wealth of the Tsarist period is laid out for these visitors that come from all parts of the Soviet Empire to see the jewels. The display is terribly impressive. But here was a vestment, a Russian priest under the old order, proclaiming the name of Christ, but lacking his spirit and lacking the renunciation of wealth for impressiveness, wore a vestment so full of jewels that it weighed 40 pounds. And the humility and the love of Christ was overshadowed and overwhelmed by this gaudiness and this outrageous display of worldly wealth. No wonder the communists have said to the people of Russia, have nothing to do with the church. This represents exploitation. This was through the mistreatment of the masses of the Russian people. They've done all they can to, in their attack upon organized religion, to exploit the mistake that the Orthodox Church of Russia made in the period of the Tsars. So it is not ours to defend the Russian Church of the old days merely because it called itself Christian. They're to be measured by their real devotion to the morals of Christianity and to the compassion that should be in Christianity. One of the great problems of our Baptist people is to live down the old order. And when they say rather friendly words about the communists, it isn't that they enjoy the police state, or that they would tolerate it, or that they are satisfied to be deprived of the religious liberty that we cherish in the West. It is only because they make that contrast. Inevitably, they say, but this wasn't possible under the old order. They constantly measure their progress by the old condition, not by the comparison with us. For the communists are too clever in this campaign against religion. If you hear me quoted to the effect that there is freedom of worship, please attach importance to the use of the word worship. I have not said there is freedom of religion in Russia. We hope by encouragement of our people there and by sound governmental methods, for I have debated the question as to how far I should go in the use of the avenues of governmental intrusion that I might use in their behalf. But we hope to open doors that are closed to them now and to help them appreciate and to realize full religious liberty. They're entitled to our help. I wish I could tell you so many things in which you would be interested out of this Russian scene, out of the Russian experience which carried my Washington pastor, my Watch Care pastor. I have two pastors, don't forget. I am a member of the Second Baptist Church in Little Rock. Never have been able to work up to the First Church. But my Watch Care pastor, for I do attend church in Washington when Congress is in session, is the president of the American Baptist Convention. When he was elected 2 days after you gave me this great honor in Chicago, my Arkansas friend said, now ain't that a coincidence? But a very good one, a very nice one, because we went to Russia together and we had these four thrilling days with the Russian people. Russian Baptists, 530,000 of them. Moscow, the fifth city in the world, 5 million people in the capital, but only 57 churches of all kinds to take care of their religious needs. 57 churches, one Baptist church, perhaps 50 Orthodox churches in a city that is the fifth largest city in all the world. 5,000 Baptist churches throughout Russia, but 200 million people to be served. Our people, however, are not disconsolate. And I want to tell you this morning, before I forget it, that the good cheer which apparently we were able to bring to them, the encouragement we gave speaking for 10 million American Baptists, 8.5 million Southern Baptists, I heard that audience gasp. Dr. Zidkoff said, Mr. Hayes speaks for 8.5 million people. It was worth all that it cost the Foreign Mission Board to send me and all of the discomfort and inconvenience of the rugged travel which I experienced. I know, and I'm sure of it. You're interested, and this is an audience entitled to have some specific references to the women in our Baptist church. I'm always asked about that. The questions most often asked, well, are the audiences or the congregations dominated by the women? And the answer is yes, they're the larger number. And I'm speaking mathematically, only mathematically. Yeah. It was a bad word to use, wasn't it? Yeah. Predominate. That is the word I wanted. And then I'm asked about the young people. 20% of that congregation is young, and I don't know where they drew the line, so I don't want to be too meticulous about this thing. And anyway, you never can tell from appearances, even in Russia, how old a woman is. That has both its humorous and its pathetic side. In Russia, Ms. Cranford, who was with us, avoided using any cosmetics, and she took off her jewelry, and I removed my rings for the whole day, the whole period I was there, so eager was I to avoid any display of that kind. And there was pathos in the rather wistful look that these women cast in the direction of Catherine Cranford. Her shoes, for they have no shoes that would appeal to you. I found often the women wearing leggings and boots and the cheap calico dresses. To be sure I wouldn't forget it, I did that, Miss Alma. Don't let that get away. That's a product of my artistry. The picture of a woman that really is typical of the Russian women, the padded coat, colorless and ugly, the traditional shawl, the cheap calico skirt, and then the leggings or the boots. Life should be more beautiful for them. And beauty should become more of an accepted element in their lives. It's only because of the tragedy of war and the suffering that the people have endured for years that they do not have the material means by which to claim the right of beauty and of attractiveness. The Russian people have suffered 14 invasions from the West over that great land, all of them repelled. But in 100 years, 14 invasions by a civilization, the French and the Polish and the German, that were supposed to be superior to these so-called primitive Slavic peoples. There's something to humble us in the history of Russia, for the 14 invasions were repelled by people who loved their soil as we love ours. And whatever we think of their ideology, this terrible, loathsome system, the police state, communism, the godlessness of Marxism, whatever we think of those governmental patterns, and we are agreed upon them, here are some things to cheer us. The Russian people not only love their soil, they're even distinguished for a love of their family. The two things that have made difficult the job of the communists to sweep the state into their hold completely. The two things have been that love of family and that devotion to religion. It's basically there. It's potentially powerful in the life of the state. So powerful that the communists inaugurated in the post-Easter season when they were there their usual campaign against religion. It's a superstition, they said. This young lady, a very intelligent person, a young interpreter who was with us all of the time, and who had to report to the governmental agent, I'm sure, anything that was said that might have a political significance. This young lady standing in the pulpit with me represented an emerging eagerness on the part of Russia to know more about the world. They put tremendous emphasis upon education, as you know. Though they have gotten it out of balance in their emphasis upon science. They have endowed science with all of the authority that they deprived religion of. 1,000 laboratories in the building we saw, the University of Moscow, 32 stories high, only 5 buildings in the world higher than that one, 22,000 students. This young lady had never been in a church service before. We had a 2-hour service that morning. There were 2 sermons, there were 6 anthems, glorious music, beautiful congregational singing, though no hymn books. They sang melodies that are familiar to us, Work for the Night is Coming, and other songs familiar to us. I asked them, incidentally, to sing Amazing Grace, and Mr. Zidkoff said, as they were taking the collection, but he said, we don't know that one. He said, sing it to me, maybe we do. And I did the unbelievable thing. I turned and sang Amazing Grace, the first verse, to Zidkoff. And when I finished, he said, we don't know that. I think they did. He just didn't recognize it. But for 2 hours, this young lady was in a service in which Lenin's name was not mentioned, Stalin's name was not referred to, and for the first time she heard the name of Christ exalted. I wondered if it made any impression upon her. Someday I want to know her impressions of this experience with us. She said she had been only 20 minutes in a service once when some curious people from America that she was performing the same service for that she had rendered us asked to be admitted to the service. But here she had been for 2 hours listening to the Baptist service. It must have impressed her. I haven't been as deeply moved in years as I was on that occasion as we went into the pulpit, having waited a little while in order to press our way through the audience, and then flowing in behind us, the people that had been queued up at the door for a block away, coming in behind us, filling up every square space in that little building, 2,000 of them, 1,200 sitting, 800 standing. We got into the pulpit, I looked out, and these people, these women, these good women, whose lives have been broken by the toil and the suffering they've endured, these good women were weeping. I think they were tears of joy. This was the place where they could find solace and comfort. It is only religion that can give comfort to the soul that is in distress. They could not find it in communist ideology. They're silent, of course, against the plea of their state. Only 8 million communists in the 200 million, among the 200 million. These people are not communists. If there were communists among our Baptist people, it represented an infiltration of the state. Though I must remember that their loyalty to our way of life religiously, their loyalty to Christianity is in the framework of other governmental loyalties, and I must say nothing to embarrass them. There is room ordinarily in the same heart for the Christian and the patriot. There certainly is in America, and it's a wonderful thing that they can reside in the same heart. I pray that in Russia that will be increasingly true, that they will not have to be embarrassed in their governmental loyalties to be true to that which is paramount. And so in the life of the spirit which is flowering and growing and being enriched, we hope, in Russia, we find that our Baptist people are taking a prominent part. Mrs. Cranford said, I bring you the greetings of American women, the Christian women of America, I bring you their love. May I return word to them, may I say to them that they are the recipients of your love. And that great audience stood spontaneously and chanted the words, meaning certainly, certainly. The word yes is da, but there was another word, it was a more powerful word, entering into their response. And then we came to the conclusion of the meeting, to saying, God be with you till we meet again. I wept with them then. I haven't cried in a long time, but unashamedly I cried with my Russian Baptist that morning, because this was a loved song and we were singing in it a melody that was familiar to me. I and Dr. Cranford, Ms. Cranford, we sang it in English, and the vast audience sang it in Russian, and the embassy representative who was in the balcony told me that it was obvious that they were impressed with the fact that we were singing with them. He had followed the translations carefully. He said it was pretty faithfully conveyed to them the things that we were saying. We went out to the airport to say goodbye the next day, the fourth day. I'd been with them every day. We'd had our conferences. We'd had tea with them. They brought out their best confections. I'm sure there was a little sacrifice involved in their serving us that good tea and the oranges and the apples and the cakes that they had brought to entertain us on the day before Sunday. But when it was necessary to tell us goodbye, here was something impressive. Mr. Karif said in Russian, insisting, so the interpreter told me that she should convey it to me, but addressing her, these were his words, if one comes often enough to the house of the Lord and hears God's word, one might become a believer. And she smiled quizzically about that. And I made this response, if she should, I'll come back across the ocean to see her baptized. It was just my little contribution to the evangelization of the Russians, the help from a Baptist layman to professional preachers who are preaching God's word every Sunday from the same Bible. There hasn't been a change in the translation. The communists haven't dared to change the translation. I'm told that every book that's distributed in the Russian language through our people is a faithful translation from the King James Version. We took 8 Bibles to them. Russian government has generously allowed them to print 50,000 more, but that doesn't scratch the surface. I refer to the fact they had no hymn books. These people are without literature. Russia, in the course of one generation since the revolution of 1917, has become a literate nation. 10% of the people could read and write in 1917. Today, 90%. And so we must take into account the rapid strides toward literacy. But to be able to read doesn't mean anything unless they read understandingly and with a knowledge of God's love as they pursue the pages of the Bible unless it conveys to their soul the compassion and the mercy of God, it has little meaning. And so I close with that thought. And will you please let me come home now to our own shores? I want to say something in praise of you women. I want to say something out of my own meditations about the vast importance of the work you do in the unknown fields of Christian service here in the homeland. Your gifts are important. You've heard this eloquent testimony. You know how much it means, yes, in faraway places. Our $14 million that went into the Foreign Mission Fund, something like $6 million from you, wasn't it? Over $5 million from our Lottie Moon offerings, the women and their generous gifts have so greatly increased our Foreign Mission Fund. I salute you for that. But I know what you're doing in this struggle to exhibit God's compassion for people. I would be disconsolate today in the face of this world's suffering. One is more aware of it, of course, when he's with the people of Russia, for they have suffered. They lost more in one battle than we lost in all of the engagements in the Pacific theater during the Second World War. They have greatly suffered. And we are suffering too, I told them when a European said to me that we could not understand them because we have not suffered. I insisted that we have. The sensitive heart suffers with others. We enter into the experiences of those who are prostrate in grief. We share the heartaches of other people. That's at the core and center of the Christian fellowship. And so when I see the women organized in their unions, in their local congregations, to minister to people who suffer and to stand by this central truth, I am heartened by it as your Baptist official for a little while. The other day in the city of Washington, there was a story recorded of two boys from Ohio, both of them 18 years of age, an interesting parallel and an interesting contrast to here dramatized in the life of two lads was something that represents the idea with which I want to close. For it's the thing that the world supremely needs right now. One lad had lived wantonly and cruelly and murderously. He had slain his fellow man, and so the state of Ohio found it necessary to take his life, to execute him. I doubt that any state ought ever to take a man's life who is no more than 18 years of age, for he isn't a man, he's only a child. But they were to kill him in the electric chair for having killed others. And this lad sought the help of a chaplain. A minister with understanding and with love went into the cell in his last days to talk about God's forgiveness and God's love. Man's love could have no meaning in that extremity. And as he walked to the electric chair, this lad who fought back the tears and who with trembling lips tried to convey his emotions said, God has forgiven me. Somebody had failed to live correctly and effectively before him. But the other lad was just 18 too, an Ohio boy who had run away from home and was found in a minor offense in Washington, violating the law, but no felony, and so he was not to be executed, but there was no home for him. But the women of the churches, working with the social workers, the employees of a Christian government, we don't say enough about that. We often think of governmental service as something secular, and we even hold political life in contempt. But social workers filled with God's love and with committed lives are rendering a Christian service often. And these District of Columbia employees, loving that lad, said we've got to find a home for him because his own family had renounced him. This homeless lad found help. Where? In the spiritual resource that the women of the churches of Washington had accumulated for him. This is the lesson the world needs. And our power and our strength is not in our modern forms of efficient service through our
facilities, great though they are, our power and our strength is in our dedication and in our response to God's love. And the bringing of ourselves together, not only in worship, but in commitment to daily service, the world needs it more than anything else. I close this little testimony, this little talk, as I close my talk to them. The words above the pulpit in the Moscow church were, Bog yas ludov. About the only words I learned in Russian, except do svidaniya, goodbye, and spasido, thank you, for as these people tried to touch us, we three, as we went out of that place, we could shake hands rapidly with many of them, but all of them thrilled by what we had said to them of you and your life. Above the pulpit, those simple words, I had seen it first in a Baptist church in Arkansas. Above the pulpit, it is in many of our thousands of churches. God is love. God is love. This is the New Testament message. Mrs. Mathis, it's very gracious of you to let me come. You will hear my voice more often than you should this week, because that is my assignment. But I will have no service in all of this convention that has given me a greater pleasure than to be with you, the dedicated women of our convention.